Welcome back, everybody. Today we're going to talk about how to determine what is true. And yes, this is an LD issue, as students with learning disabilities do have a lot of problems with this kind, with social skills and also with determining what's true and the larger comprehension questions, because they're spending so much effort on decoding, so they're having trouble with higher order reading. And well, there's plenty of possibilities about why they may be having trouble with social skills. But anyway, they have difficulty determining what is true, and looks like this is a topic that everybody needs to talk about. I'm going to give you 7 points on how to tell what is true. Points on how to tell what is true. It is a LD issue. We don't like to say learning disabilities, but that's who I want to help. People who have learning problems of all kinds, and a big group of that has these diagnoses called learning disabilities. And although I don't like that label, and we should talk about labels very soon, nevertheless, this is an LD issue, and it's an issue for everybody today. Okay, so I'm going to give you short and sweet with some examples, both in the smaller order social problems that children have and in the larger conversation that adults have, because the same principles apply and it's all necessary. And some of you have teenagers and college students who are beginning to grapple with the adult conversation very much, and may not be being helped, may not be being supported in that, quite the contrary. So what we don't want to have is snookering. So evil-intentioned people or self-interested people who are willing to sacrifice the good of our children or of ourselves because can't sort out what's true. And so we get snookered, defrauded, and let's avoid that. And mothers of children who have LD diagnosis know that it just seems that there is a target painted on their back. Why are there so many problems? Well, this is one of them, is because of the lack of sorting out what's true, what's not true, what's well-intended, what's not well-intended, and so forth. So first is look at the evidence. We'll talk about that, but let me go down the list. Then I'm going to talk about start from definitions. 3, hear the other side. 4, does the story hang together? 5, is there some ulterior motive or hidden personal or pecuniary interest? 6, does this truth work? And 7, what will be the result if you go down this road or the other road? So, number 1, evidence. Observe if there's any evidence. So when mom walks into the living room and the lamp is broken, and she says, "Who broke the lamp?" "Oh, the lamp wasn't broken." "It's broken." Okay. If there was a big crash in the kitchen and the cookie jar that was on top of the counter is now on the floor, and there's 2 kids both looking guilty, the question becomes, which one has cookie crumbs on their mouth? You look for evidence, and that's somewhat obvious. If somebody is telling you you should invest in a stock or something, you're going to say, how do you know, right? It asks you to go into this business. How do you know, and what is the evidence that you have good experience or we're going to make money in this? And it doesn't matter what story. If it's a story from neighborhood Eddie Haskell, that was an old sitcom. Anyway, he was the neighbor kid who was up to no good, or if it's, you know, somebody in vaulted politics, you need to find out what is the evidence. And there's a lot of times there's a whole big emotional story that gets you to skip that step. But the first step is there any evidence to this story? And so one of the first things you should always teach your kids, and it's up to you to teach them about finances for sure, because the school doesn't do it, is teach them to ask, how do you know? Look for evidence. Going along with that is start from definitions. Definitions. So what do these actual words mean? Now, if it's just neighborhood kids, maybe that would come up, you know? Maybe these kids have been trained to do something snookering. This does happen. But it really comes up about the time students are in senior high or college. A lot of argumentation happens where the meaning of the word is twisted during the argument. So the premises are accepted, but the conclusion is a stinger because the definitions weren't clear. Contrary, if you want to write a good paper, argue from definitions. This means this, and therefore this and this follows. You got a strong argument paper. And by the way, you'll make an A. Okay, so right now we're talking about nationalism, and nationalism is terrible, right? Nationalism is the same as racism, and it's the same as Nazism, you know? So if you're a nationalist, if you're anything but a globalist, then you must be Hitler. Is that logical? Well, there are a lot of problems with that train of thought. First is there's no evidence from that. And it's a very emotional argument, but also the definition. What does nationalism mean? That means that you believe that everybody in that country should work for the good of for that country, and that country should have rulers who are of those people. All right, so that's a good definition of nationalism. So what is the opposite to nationalism? What's the, in terms of the English language, what's the opposite to nationalism? How about imperialism, or maybe globalism? So there's globalism and globalization is different things, but globalism, so globalization is all the nations now have the technology to trade at a global level instead of just with their neighbors. But globalism means transnationalism or against nationalism, so that there should be a world ruler. But every time we've had which is the same as being for an empire. Every time we've had an empire, the empire has ruled and has favored its home city rather than, or home country, rather than its colonies. Rome was more interested in Rome than it was in Gaul or Palestine. Right? And so, empire. And so, wait a minute, Hitler and racism is always put in together with nationalism. Was Hitler a nationalist? No, Hitler was an imperialist. He wanted to rule the earth. So, and he was a racist. He was an imperialist and racist. Oh, and by the way, if you take historical Israel, I'm talking about historical Israel, okay, not the current nation, although you could. Historical Israel, of course, was nationalist, but they adopted people into their families and cultures. You know, Rahab, Caleb. Caleb wasn't even a Hebrew. Remember the two spies, give me my mountain, Caleb? So Caleb was a Gentile. Rahab, who was in the lineage of King David, was a Gentile, and so forth and so on. So, and many, many, many were. So there you have it. So evidence and definitions, along with evidence, perhaps I should have said anecdotes, are not as strong as statistics. Anecdotes don't prove something. They only illustrate something. Just because you can come up with one or two examples doesn't mean that this is a trend. So statistics are stronger. However, to read statistics, you have to be sure that you've got the definitions. You have to be sure that you're reading those charts properly, and that they haven't been put out in a way that is intended to obfuscate the matter. All right, so evidence and arguing from definition three. Hear the other side. Okay, so always ask what is the opposite. So that's how I came up with this, oh, bugaboo nationalism. Stop, hold the phone. What's the opposite? Oh, so if you are making nationalism necessarily bad, then are you necessarily for imperialism? And it doesn't make sense. Well, that's story not hanging together, because the very people who are arguing for imperialism today, decades ago, were arguing, oh, the United States is bad because it's an imperialist power. And now they're arguing it's a nationalist power. Anyway, moving right along. Hear the other side. What's the opposite? So Timmy broke the lamp. Okay, so what does Timmy have to say? Oh no, Johnny broke the lamp. Hear the other side. And when there is a real push not to let you hear the other side, that's probably when it's more important. Okay, four, does the story hang together? Is it logical? So liars tend not to remember. It's much easier to remember the truth. And so liars will often leave something out or tell the same thing incorrectly. Oh, my mother is so sick, so please give me some money because she's in the hospital. And then, you know, the first time you hear it, she has cancer, and the second time she has gallbladder emergence. So which is it? Oh, well, it's both, right? Does the story hang together? You know, and this is why lawyers cross-examine and often are fairly hostile when they cross-examine their witnesses, because witnesses break down and they get stressed out and they don't remember. Also ask if this makes sense. Does this story make sense? So if the CDC and the WHO are now arguing with each other, what exactly is going on? Maybe it's just a misunderstanding. Since we started on that, just think for a minute. A HEPA filter. You know those HEPA filters, hundreds of dollars, these blocks that make a fan and clean the air in your house. You spend $400 for a good one and a couple hundred dollars for the HEPA filter. You notice on their documentation, those HEPA filters don't strain out viruses. See, a virus is just so much smaller than a dust particle or even a bacteria. The labels specifically say they don't take out viruses. But a bandana does? Really? And folks, not any other combination of cloth and paper either. Except unless it's labeled N95, and then you've got to be sure it really is an N95 and not just a label on the package. Does it make sense? And of course you teach this to your children. Your kids get teased all the time, at least in Texas culture, all the time. And if the kid can't figure out what's just the story and what's reality, they get teased more until they do. And I guess that's why it lasts in culture. I never enjoyed it as a kid, but need to help your children sort out what is a likely truth and just ignore the stories that are built to get them riled up. All right, so five. Is the person who's telling the story, do they have an ulterior motive? Is there a likely personal or pecuniary interest? Meaning, is there a personal vendetta involved, or are they trying to get money out of you? For instance, one thing that seems to go on with youngsters a lot, junior, senior high, is trying to get two kids who are, you know, going steady or whatever, get them to be broken up. One girl will come and tell the other girl, oh, this guy has been two-timing on you. Like, why would she do that? Well, first you'd find out if there's any evidence, find out what his side is and blah, blah, blah. But usually kids will jump to conclusions. But often I saw that the kids were doing this just to make trouble. But more often, if this, particularly if it was started by a boy, it was because he thought he would gain something by it. He either wants to put down the rival guy or he wants the girl. of course, it's not sensible that just because she broke up with one guy, she'll hook up with the guy who broke them up. Anyway, and of course, salesmen all the time will tell you the pros, and you start asking them questions, and they'll avoid the answers. So that's a light. You know, when there is a suppression of the truth, like, say, the evil historical Asian emperor starts tearing out the tongues of some sage or whatever, is that because the sage is telling lies? Probably not. Probably because there is a pecuniary or personal interest in the emperor, wants to be sure that that other story doesn't get out, right? Because maybe the guy is telling the truth about what the emperor did that was bad or whatever. And so he just, because he has the power to do it, he tears his tongue out. It doesn't prove at all that he's a liar. I got a mailing from my bank. Flyer said bank error resolution. But you looked in the flyer and it was all about ATM security. So what was the bank error resolution? I never understood. Or there have been stories in the news media for like 3 or 4 years. Russian collusion didn't make sense on the face of it. But somebody must have had an interest in promoting that story since there was never any evidence. I just don't get it. It doesn't hang together. There's no face validity of it. Or insurrection at the Capitol. What does insurrection mean? Now, we had a riot. Not good. Insurrection? How is that an insurrection? And why is that riot so horrendous when 400 this summer were something just to wink at? I just don't get it. Somebody, quite aside from the pictures of the Antifa and BLM people who were escorted by the law enforcement SUVs brought in. 6. Does it work? Now, this came from a story that a Buddhist told me. You may not realize that there are many different Buddhisms. And so there was a particular group of Buddhism that arose in Japan, and they were particularly interested in debating with the Zen Buddhists and the other Buddhists who were more in ascendancy. And they came up with 3 reasons how to tell what was true. And then as I was discussing with my friend here, well, we decided that these 3 came down to 1. And does this work? So this particular group said, their doctrine was better because it worked. And particularly it worked because their founder had miracles. So I'm going to take that story and that principle and use it in general. So is something the truth can also be determined by, does it work? Of course, this blends from truth, meaning is this a correct fact, to a broader kind of truth. But does this work? So, for instance, does it work to be optimistic? It's better to be optimistic and we should never be negative. Well, not exactly. So it is functional to be cheerful and hopeful to have better outcomes, but one also needs to keep negative boundaries and neutral hearing minds. So whatever slogan we have, it may have some explanatory power, but not unlimited, because maybe it needs to be put in with some others, right? So that's example of, is this true? Often people tell stories that seem to be functional but don't make a better life. Like, I remember when I was a file clerk, 17 or something, and I was getting promoted because I had some initiative. For instance, as a file clerk, when we had problems because we had too many files on one shelf, I would tell the supervisor, look, we're having a problem, and I'll come in Saturday and fix that if you like. And so I got overtime and promotion, and this happened quite a bit. And I told another gal who was working with me, and she was newer, and incidentally, she was black. This may or may not play into the story. And she would say, oh, no, I'm just going to keep my nose clean. I said, no, look, I go to the boss and I say this, and that's why I'm getting promoted. And I'm, in a month, I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be promoted to the next level. I won't be a file clerk anymore. I'm telling you how to do it. So you just go to the boss, because we were both standing in the file room, both having the same problem, both understanding the problem, both knowing the solution. I say, go to the boss and say this. I will come in Saturday morning and I'll do this. She said, oh, no. I'm just going to keep my nose clean. So certain amount that must have been functional. That's what she was taught to do. And of course, it's better not to make trouble, and it's better to stay out of trouble. And that's what keep your nose clean meant. But in this case, that was harming her from getting the kind of rapid promotion that I was getting, because she was telling herself a story that wasn't functional for that situation. So that's my, is it true? Does it work? And I've noticed over the years, over the decades, back to the college situation, that the cultural conversation in our nation has unhinged us first from the truth, capital T. So we don't have any truth, and it was considered unlearned to posit an absolute truth, that we were supposed to then just look at facts, and divorced from a metaphysics, absolute truth. And when that got established, then we started being unhinged from facts, and facts no longer mattered. And then we had a substitute new truth without facts, you know, which we would call an ideology. And of course, that ideology has been tried over a century in many countries and many cultures, and it's never worked. So is it a true truth? Okay, and I'm sure there's some other suggestions, but does this work? So if it's true in terms of functional, is it actually functional? Okay, so that was number six. Number seven, what will be the result if you go down this one road or another? So if somebody's telling you something, of course you're going to ask for evidence, and you're going to ask for definitions, and you're going to see if they're trying to snooker you, if they have some personal ulterior motive, and you're going to see if this works. But also, you have alternative paths. Please try to look down the path to see what the result will be if you take this as true. Well, this is what mathematicians do. You know, they'll try to work out a formula one way and then another way. But this also works in personal things. You know, for instance, maybe it's true that you should not get married because it's wrong to be chattel. Okay, so I have female friends who refuse to become married, even though they have mates who'll marry them officially and legally. They refuse to do it because they don't want to be chattel. And they define marriage as women being chattel. And so that is a compelling argument. And maybe they would say that's true. But the alternative thing is, what happens when young women don't get officially married and they have children and they don't have long-term spouses to help them rear children, to help them bring in income into the household? And so this is another, I guess, another version of, does this work? So in some cases, it's difficult to determine what is fact or what is true. And sometimes we need something beyond our own understanding, what we can sort out. And so for those things, leaning on traditional values is not irrational, because traditional values are traditional values because they worked in that culture over time. And so you notice that every culture has a way to regularize sexual relations in a way that ensures that children are reared. And in our modern culture, we have some pretty good sounding arguments, but the result has been something that doesn't quite work for the children, and often for the women, and often for the wider society. For instance, if 30% of our children are born without two parents in the home, then we have higher social spending. and we have lower education rates, and we have higher crime rates, and so there we go. So what is the result if you go down one road or another? For instance, not to get involved. If I am not going to get involved. So that may seem to be functional in the short term, but in the long term, you may find that you do not have, you haven't risen in repute because you weren't involved in civic engagements, although maybe you had more evenings off, or maybe you even live in a place that now has a tyrannical government because so many people said, I am not going to be involved, meaning not going to be involved in the rigors and the discipline of democracy. There's just so many possibilities here. So I would suggest that what is true and works is good, and what is good and works is true. So we have some friends who are talking about the good, the true, and the beautiful. It's high time we did have those discussions. You know, what is good? What is a virtuous life? And how should we best proceed? What is true? And we need to consider how to sort out what's true, what's factual, what's not factual, what is true in a wider sense. And I think this will make a more beautiful life. Okay, so that's my meditation and my quick thoughts on how to sort out what is true. And you need to directly teach your children who are having learning problems, because they're spending so much energy, and probably all children, energy on sorting out their issues. They need to be taught. That's why there are such things as parents and teachers, right? So evidence, look for evidence, start from definitions, watch those definitions, be sure they don't change. Ask what is the opposite, hear the other side. Does the story hang together? Is it logical? Does it have face value? Does whoever is presenting one position, are they presenting it with ulterior motive, whether personal or pecuniary? Does this quote-unquote truth work? And what will be the result if you go down this road? This is a real life skill to be able to ask this. This is something that the children with learning problems need to be taught. Probably all of us need to be taught and reconsider periodically. I am intending to make a course on critical thinking, and even calling it that skews it. Maybe it's logical thinking, because critical, we need to be synthetic as well as analytical, and not just critical. It's not about deconstruction only. So I think we need to call it logical thinking. And I notice that all the critical thinking courses are biased one way and have some real logical fallacies in them. So I intend to make that, and I will let you know when that is made, and it may be on Udemy or other platforms as well. So if you're interested in that, let me know, because I always have more projects than I can do all at once. Do communicate with me. Come to the website, comment there, share your good ideas, ask me questions, and feel free to send in prayer requests. And also, I am giving away the packet, a Faith Family Learning packet. So this was the original version of the Learn at Home for Great Shalom. This was made on 8.5 by 11 sheets so that you could put it in a binder. And I will give those away to the first 10 people who contribute to this broadcast in any way. So you can either go to the website, which is either greatshalom.org or overcominglearningproblems.org, then go through PayPal, either with your PayPal account or with a credit card, and PayPal handles that, and then be sure to email me also so that I can match the PayPal, because they don't let me know who sent it, and your email, so I can, an address, a land address, because this is paper. Or send me a check at P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. And please do that quickly, because these will go away. And I have heard that some people are offended that I have asked for money, but look, secular folks ask for money in terms of GoFundMe, and it really is true that it benefits you, that if you will make it a habit not to be a freeloader, if you will make it a habit to invest in what is important for you, and this will change your life and your children's lives, and I've not, you know, charged big prices for this, and I know a lot of people make big fat funnels and charge umpteen dollars for courses, and I've been giving the West away freely for a long time and giving this away to you, so hardly can you make an argument, you cannot make an argument that this is money grubbing. There is no evidence for that. I will take offerings. There is no 501c3 benefit at this time. This is February 2021 that I'm recording this, and I do not have a 501c3 status and do not intend to get one at this point. Have had it in the past, but you know, there's a lot of rigmarole and there's some cost involved. But anyway, we'll receive that and would recommend it to you, and believe you'll be blessed for it.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come.
I know you want to get my Dangerous Times Secrets to Victory for Parents and Educators. You need it. It will revolutionize the way you deal with your children or teach your class. I guarantee it. Vital teaching. 4 CDs in a set, $50. Write me at P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630.
Sharon would love to pray with you for your children. In fact, it would be an honor for her and her prayer team to bring you and your loved ones to the throne of grace. Just email your urgent prayer request to info@greatshalom.org or write to the Great Shalom Broadcast, P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. God says, where two or more are gathered together, I am there. God hears and answers prayer.
30. That's P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas 78630. And this podcast is found wherever you find podcasts. If you're not finding it, let me know. Okay. And please share it. Thank you very much.